Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it's 42 degrees under overcast skies. Today is Monday, November 28th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Sitka police are looking into a Thanksgiving night break-in at the city's animal shelter. The animal shelter is located at 209 Jarvis Street. Police officials were not immediately available for comment, but a dispatcher at the police department said the incident was reported at 8:30 on Thursday night and that it remains under investigation. The shelter has a capacity to house 18 dogs and between 5 and 7 cats. The state is re-examining its cost estimate for the first Alaska-class ferry, and it's likely to come in higher than the total allocated to construction. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Earlier this year, the legislature set aside $60 million for its next generation of ships. That brought funding to a total of $120 million. Many thought it would be enough to design and build the first vessel.
Unfortunately, numbers tend to stick, and $120 million is the number that stuck, so everybody believes that's full funding for the vessel.
Captain Mike Newsell runs the Alaska Marine Highway System. He says the estimate is several years old and may be low.
That may or may not be the case because we're not on contract with anybody for a vessel at that price.
The ferry system has asked Elliott Bay Design Group, its architectural engineering firm, to revise the numbers. Ketchikan's Alaska Ship and Dry Dock will likely build the ship. Newsell says a lot of factors affect the cost.
The price of steel, the cost of labor, the design of the ship, there's a lot of factors that play into that, and whether it's higher or lower, I couldn't really tell you.
He's unsure when the new information will become available. Officials have decided not to take federal funds for the Alaska-class ferry. That would add environmental requirements and block an in-state contract preference. State government is the other source of construction money.
I think one of the issues that we need to keep an eye on is our replacement of the marine ferries.
Sitka lawmaker Bert Stedman assembles the Senate's capital budget as co-chairman of that chamber's finance committee.
And I have been hearing that, you know, we might have to put forward a little bit more money for the first one, and that has me a little bit concerned, but clearly we need to have a discussion on when we want to start funding the second one, because we need to build 2 to 3 of these ships and retire our older vessels because of the operational costs.
The first Alaska-class ferry will sail Lynn Canal, linking Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. A second is slated to travel between Ketchikan and Prince Rupert. A third would double up on the Lynn Canal route. The ships will be about 350 feet long and carry up to 500 passengers and about 70 vehicles. They will have crew quarters, but no staterooms, and will not sail overnight. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Petersburg's city council is offering incentives to a Washington company to help open a new sawmill on Mitkoff Island. KFSK's Joe Vicnicki reports.
The memorandum of understanding is between the city, the Petersburg Economic Development Council, and Glenn Solutions. That's a company in Shelton, Washington, that has been interested in the possibility of starting up a new sawmill in either Petersburg or Wrangell. Company owner John Glenn is a former Petersburg resident and presented his ideas for a mill to the council's finance committee back in September. Councillor Rick Braun Monday wondered about the timber supply for a new mill and questioned potential costs to the city.
You know, putting a mill on Mitkoff Island, I hope this goes through, but I want everybody that's involved here to be completely aware of what the costs are going to be and, you know, how far down this road we're going to go before we really understand what this means to the city.
The agreement approved by the council commits the city to supply information on the costs of developing a new mill site and to provide discount electrical power for new and expanded commercial enterprises. The PEDC could loan Glenn money for the new mill up to $10,000 for each new job the mill creates, but that would depend on voter approval. And for his part, Glenn would have to provide a business plan to the city for the operation, and he'd also have to agree to locate the mill on Mitkoff Island. Councillor Don Koenigs thought those stipulations were important.
The key is he willing to come up with a business plan that's, you know, going to be acceptable in the terms and conditions, and is he going to give up his position on Wrangell and say, I will sign this agreement and I will deal with you in good faith. That, to me, is key as we put any human effort into this.
The agreement is in place until the end of 2012, unless it's extended by the city, the PEDC, and Glenn. The PEDC board has already approved the agreement, and the city council voted Monday 4-0 to approve it as well. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
Alaskans are trying out electric cars in increasing numbers, but the state is behind the Pacific Northwest, where more than 1,000 drivers have hit the road this year with the first mass-market vehicles. Many of them are letting researchers electronically track their charging and driving behavior. That data shows unexpected news. More than 80% of electric fill-ups are happening at home instead of at public charging points. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi looks at what that might mean for government-funded charging stations.
Dick Hauser is living on the cutting edge. The retired economist in Olympia was among the first in the Northwest to drive home with a 100% electric Nissan Leaf.
And the RFID key is in my pocket, so that's close enough, and the car will be okay to turn on.
The plug-in car is the only car he and his wife own. The Hausers mostly just make short trips since they're retired.
It's 3 miles to the food co-op. It's 5 miles out to my mother's house.
How often have you used a public charging station?
I have not used one yet because of that.
Hauser plugs his Leaf in every night at the charger in his garage. He got the device for free in exchange for letting government and industry researchers track his trips and fill-ups. More than 900 other early adopters in Washington and Oregon have taken the same deal. Collectively, these Northwest electric vehicle drivers have logged well over 1.5 million miles in their Nissan Leafs, or Leaves, whichever you prefer. The Idaho National Lab processes and publishes quarterly data. Principal investigator Jim Frankfort says the initial readouts show in the Northwest more than 80% of battery recharges happened at home.
It's still fairly early as far as the breaking down the charging information. There's not a lot of infrastructure out there yet for people to use.
But the pace of deployment has definitely ramped up. Installation of charging points has been heavily subsidized with public funds and tax credits. There are now more than 100 public charging stations in Oregon, several hundred in Washington, and a handful in Idaho. So far, Frankfort says utilization by drivers is quite low.
In Washington State, only 1% of the time were the vehicles connected to the public charging infrastructure, while over in Oregon, they are connected about 7% of the time to the public infrastructure, and only 1% of that time was they actually charging.
Given the low usage, should the government keep subsidizing more public charging points? The Pacific Northwest manager for Ecotality, a company that makes chargers, says it's too early to draw that conclusion. Rich Feldman doesn't plan any mid-course corrections in the deployment of public charging infrastructure.
We're very busy installing infrastructure and working with private parties and public entities to host charging stations, commercial charging stations. So we're committed to building out the rest of the infrastructure.
The manager of a charging strip at Portland State University points out new higher voltage quick chargers are just now coming online, and they could make a difference in driver behavior. George Beard says the ability to get a fast top-off could give electric vehicle drivers the confidence to venture farther.
To me, metaphorically, it's like a beginning swimmer who tends to dog paddle around in the shallow end of the pool, but when you know that there are those floats that go across the pool, oftentimes we're willing to swim into the deep end knowing that you can grab onto that.
So we'll go left and go down around the falls so we can get on the freeway.
The analogy works for electric car owner Dick Hauser. He says he hasn't dared to drive from Olympia to Seattle yet, a distance of about 65 miles. But adding the fast chargers, as planned in the big city, would give him the reassurance that he can get juice to get back home.
So you're happy?
I'm happy. Yeah, it's fun.
I'm Tom Bonsi in Olympia.
Some chicken jerky products for dogs could be making them sick. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is warning dog owners that some chicken jerky products imported from China may be associated with various symptoms ranging from decreased appetite and activity level to vomiting and diarrhea. State veterinarian Bob Gerlach says no specific brand has been identified, but the chicken products are being sold as tenders, strips, or treats.
It actually looks like a piece of jerky that specifically says made in China. So it's not ingredients that are come from China, but the entire product is made in China and then shipped into the United States and could be packaged and labeled or relabeled once it gets here.
Gerlach says the federal agency has had a high number of complaints over the last 12 months from dog owners and veterinarians. Some dogs have died. In 2007, the FDA reported that melamine had been found in dog food imported from China and recalled more than 100 brand names. But in this case, the agency is still working with animal health laboratories to identify a contaminant in the chicken jerky products. Some of the illnesses reported may have another cause. Gerlach says it's important to notify the FDA if a dog has any of the symptoms after eating the treats. Also, keep the packaging.
So that we can get a better accounting of the extent of the problem. And the other thing is many people will say, gosh, you know, I fed the dog this, but we threw the treats out, or we threw the bag out, or the dog ate the entire bag. It's not until they can go ahead and actually get samples of the treats that are involved in this that they can do more analysis to see if they can find a problem.
Gerlach says the FDA is continuing chemical and microbial testing to find the problem. He says veterinarians and consumers should report cases of animal illness associated with pet foods to the FDA at fda.gov/petfoodcomplaints. And the Alaska Earthquake Information Center says there was a minor earthquake near Yakutat this weekend. The earthquake occurred Saturday at 5:21 p.m. and was centered 43 miles north of Yakutat. It had a preliminary magnitude of 3.9. The center says there were no reports of any damage. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka NPA calls for wind and rain, highs around 43. South winds 20 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to around 40 miles per hour, becoming southwest 10 to 15 miles per hour. In the late morning. This is Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka.